Guys, after the loss last night, I noticed something in the post-game clubhouse. Huddled in a corner, prior to taking a shower, prior to getting changed, Francisco Lindor, Brandon Nimmo, and Starling Marte, they were talking intensely from the time that we walked into the clubhouse until the time that we left. They were still going. And I asked Francisco Lindor what that conversation was about. What he told me is that they really are trying to be proactive about making sure they get this thing turned around sooner rather than later, and that they're uncovering every stone. The way he described last year is that there were so many veterans on the team that there became this thought that, okay, we've got a track record as Beatty can't make the play, so drops it in the transfer. But the idea is that last year, because of all the veterans with the track records, they just assumed, hey, we're going to get this thing turned around at some point. And ultimately, before they knew it, the trade deadline was upon them, and they traded everybody away, and the season was lost. And as Lindor put it, he said, we are not going to let that happen this year. And so they were talking about a lot of little things that they can do as a group to try and win some of these closer games. And he actually pointed to a moment last night where he could have been better on that diving stop by McNeil that he then turned and threw the ball away with Real Muto running to first base. With Schwarber running to first base. Lindor said that he needed to tell McNeil, hey, you've got time, you've got time. He was silent. And it's those little things that the three of them were focusing on, trying to make sure that they're crossing all the T's, dotting all the I's to get this thing turned around fast. Yeah, Gary, it's safe to say that as a description. I mean, this was something that, quite frankly, I've never seen before in a post-game clubhouse. Edwin Diaz did what he always does, good or bad. He stood at his locker, spoke to the media, answered every single question. But then when we were done with the post-game scrum, Diaz sat down at his locker, and all the emotion just came out. He put his head in his hands, and he started crying. Francisco Lindor had to come over, console him. Sean Reed Foley was one of the other few players in the clubhouse at the time, and he came over and got close to Diaz, sat down next to him face-to-face, just trying to, you know, give him some support and reinforce that they still have his back. And I think, you know, from a media perspective, from a fan's perspective, things like that are really good to see as a reminder that these guys are human, that this matters to these guys. And I have, to be honest with you, I have not seen anything even resembling this since Wilmer Flores back in 2015. But this really is eating away at Edwin Diaz right now. He so badly wants to perform for the fans, for his teammates, for himself, for his family. And just right now, he's lost that confidence. So I think from a Mets perspective, that's really the big goal right now, is not just to get that confidence back, but to try and alleviate some of that pressure, because Diaz doesn't just want to be good, but the last thing that he has to look back on is 2022, a season that, even if he had not gotten injured, would be almost impossible to replicate. And so they're trying to get that into his mind to say, hey, you don't need to be perfect. You don't need to be 2022. Just go out there, have confidence in yourself, have belief in yourself, because we as an organization have belief in you. So right now, as you guys discussed, it's a temporary step back from the closer's role, but I think the plan still long-term is to get him back there, because the Mets still do believe that the Edwin Diaz of old is in there, the stuff is still there, and he'll get back to it sooner rather than later.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast here on this Sunday, May 19th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets New G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to welcome in the good folks for the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition here on this Sunday night of the Talking Mets Podcast. Admittedly, I just finished watching the Knicks lose Game 7 to the Pacers, so it's been a little tough for me. I needed a couple of hours to kind of refocus, regenerate, and get on the air. And I'll be quite honest, I've been thinking long and hard about this show pretty much since Diaz blew a couple of saves against the Phillies this week. And then last night, I had left. I had somewhere to go last night, and I left when the score was 7-5. And by the time I had gotten to my event, and I checked my phone, and I saw the Mets had lost 10-9 in extra innings, I knew there'd be bad news about Diaz. And I see a third of an inning and four runs, and I just shook my head, and I said, well, pretty much it solidifies what I'm going to be talking about. And, you know, you saw in the title, The Core Crossroads, and I think that's pretty self-explanatory. And I teased it a little bit with my Beyond the Mic newsletter. And boy, I wish I wasn't ahead of the curve on this. I've been ahead of the curve with Diaz all year. I've been talking about, you know, as recently as Friday, for those who are subscribers to Beyond the Mic, how Diaz maybe needed to be put in a lower leverage situation, demoted in the bullpen of some sorts. And here we are. Carlos Mendoza basically said that after last night's ball game. But as I've been thinking all week, watching the Mets season start to spiral a little bit, but not just spiral for 2024, it's really gotten me into thinking about the macro big picture here, because I think that's the part that is most frustrating and most concerning. And maybe it's been brought forth because of the Knicks this year and the Knicks run, and I'll explain. You know, you don't have to be an NBA fan or a Knicks fan or a fan of any other sport other than the Mets and baseball to understand, you know, every sport, every team goes through some of the same garbage: expectations, the burden of expectations, you know, building as a team, bad trades, bad acquisitions, you know, guys expected to do X and they do Y. The Mets are not alone in this town with players coming here and underperforming or, you know, giving you 50 cents on the dollar compared to, you know, the expectations bringing them in. And throughout Knicks history, they've been very similar. I mean, if you think the Mets have a yoke from the 1986 World Series, the Knicks haven't won in 52 years. The last time the Knicks won, I wasn't even born. The Knicks won a championship. They've been to the finals a couple of times. I mean, this is, you talk about the Mets being like the Red Sox, being like the Cubs. I remember as a teenager, the 1940 chance when the Rangers were going for their cup run in 1994, and it was like, you know, I could die in peace. The Rangers are about to win. Mets are experiencing that. Knicks are worse. The Knicks are well over 50 years. And I mean, think about it. You know, the Mets are what, 38 years of not winning a title? They'll be 40 years in 2026. Is that how it's going to work? So 86, 90, 30. Yeah, 40 years. And the Knicks have 12 years more on top of them at that point. But I saw a Knicks team this year, and again, it doesn't matter if you watch the NBA, that, you know, came together, stars that wanted to be here, component players, you know, every move was questioned. Nobody expected much out of the team. A coach that, you know, similar to Buck Showalter before, you know, Carlos Mendoza, was an old school coach who had his detractors. And, you know, winning in any sport is hard. I mean, remember the old Billy Epler, the best team in all of baseball only has a 17% chance of winning the World Series. I don't know what it is in the NBA, but with the amount of things that have to go right, with the amount of rounds of playoffs, with how one dominant player can pretty much block out a decade's worth of opportunities for a club. Look at Michael Jordan, what he did in the late 80s into the late 90s. Winning is hard, and you saw with the Knicks how hard winning can be. Despite everything that Jalen Brunson did, despite the support from the home crowd, a positive home crowd, you know, things that happened that shouldn't have, you know, it almost seemed like fate that the Knicks were destined to go forward, similar to their 99 run to the finals, their unlikely 99 run. They fell short in the end. They fell short to a team that was a little bit better than them. You could argue it was because of injuries and whatnot. But a team that came in to the Garden on the road and put up an historic performance. That's what it took to beat the Knicks. Undermanned, by the way, to beat the Knicks. And as this game was going on, the Knicks got down by 20, 22 points, whatever it would be. And, you know, the Garden got silent like you would expect a home crowd that was a bit shell-shocked got silent. But no matter what the Knicks did, what run, albeit there was maybe one run throughout the game that really got that place going when they got it to about 6 points. Even the, you know, when they, after the lead had popped back up and the Knicks had gotten to, you know, within 15 or 14, and it was clear that this wasn't happening. I mean, Brunson was out. The crowd at the Garden was supportive. The crowd at the Garden was positive and hopeful. And when they lost, for the most part, what I've seen online is, hey, proud of this team, understanding what happened and why they weren't good enough. You know, obviously a little frustrated by the injuries. But by and large, the fan base is ready for the future and excited about the future of this club. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward. And I started to look and compare it to my experience. Now, as a Knicks fan, I don't do independent media for the Knicks. So I am just a fan there. I don't have to hide anything. I don't have to be down the middle. But I try to use some of the same, you know, processes that I use as a host here on the Talking Mets podcast to understand things in the NBA. And I say to myself, you know, the Knicks had 20 years of crazy stuff going on from the last time they were in the conference finals in 2000 to now. You know, the Isaiah Thomas situation, Ewing leaving, Carmelo Anthony, rebuilds and reboots and rebuilds and reboots. I mean, they probably had about three of them in two decades. And each one, when they had an opportunity to really take that rebuild to the next level, something happened, whether it be Carmelo Anthony, Kristaps Porzingis. And finally, they got frustrated. It was funny when this latest iteration of the Knicks was put together, nobody expected anything from any of the guys that they signed. They just went out and they signed the players, the right players that wanted to play here. Julius Randle wanted to play here. Jalen Brunson wanted to play here. They may not have been the best at each position at that time, but they wanted to play here. And they continue to go out and get guys. Maybe they're not the best or top five at their position, but they want to play here and they fit seamlessly. Now, I understand that's the NBA and it's basketball and there's a symphony there. It's like an orchestra. You can't just look at everybody individually like baseball and say, okay, they all do what they're supposed to do, you know, the team will be good. But, you know, when I look at the Mets and look at the same type of thing, I don't see that same cohesion. Like when Leon Rose came in, you know, they struck out on the big names, but right away they pivoted. And, well, that was before Leon Rose when they struck out on the big names. But when they struck out the big names and Leon Rose came in, right away, you know, he put his plan in place just to get the right people here. Be responsible with the money, but get the right people here that were right players for New York. And I have to question as I look forward, and maybe this is part and parcel of 2022 and the disappointment of how 2022 has gone on. You could point to this Mets team underachieving and really succumbing to the yoke that I talk about, the yoke that comes with the Mets organization, the crosstown Yankees being part of the reason, the failures of the past being part of the reason, the expectations that came with Cohen being the owner and his money, the yin and the yang of this city. And, you know, since August, since they took 4-5 from the Braves, pretty much, you want to point to the Timmy Trumpet's live performance, you know, to make a little bit of a Diaz connection, so be it. That was a couple of weeks later. But ever since then, this team has underachieved, has come up small in the big spot. Their big players have disappointed. Moves seemingly never work out. And the philosophy that I've been a big proponent of for a long time, going all the way back to basically 2016, 2017, when things started to go sour after, you know, you were about 2 years out from the pennant that they had in 15. I have been a proponent of keeping the core together as long as you build around the core, whether at that time it'd be the pitchers, like DeGrom and Syndergaard and what have you, even before that with Wright and Reyes. You know, don't break those guys up. Don't trade them. Try to build around them, you know, after the 06-07 situation. And, you know, I've been saying the same thing with the core here being Lindor and Alonso and Nimmo and Diaz. And it used to include McNeil, but it doesn't anymore. McNeil's not a core player, in my opinion, anymore. Everybody else is a supporting cast. Senga, Marte, J.D. Martinez at another time in his life, another time in his career, might be considered a core player, but he's not. He's a supporting cast. And, you know, maybe as time goes on, some of the guys who are the next generation, Beatty, Alvarez, Christian Scott, so on and so forth, maybe they'll get and move into the core. When you look at the core players, basically a closer and a position players, you know, an up-the-middle elite shortstop, a power-hitting first baseman, you know, an elite top of the order run creator in Beatty and the closer. You know, that's light having those kind of elite players for a contending team. But, you know, again, similar to the Knicks, you put the right guys together, you know, all of a sudden, it doesn't matter how they stand within the pecking order, the top 10 or 15 at their position. They're the right players together that make a team. The problem you have here now, and this is where I'm starting to question the core, is that every member of that core, and Nimmo's been maybe the exception, he's picked it up this month, but Pete Alonso's about 35%, about 15% worse than what he's been throughout his career on average. Lindor is about 30 to 35% worse than he has been on average. You know, Edwin Diaz has done a complete 180 back to what he was at his worst in 2019, a period that we thought we never would be able to, you know, relive again. And if you want to even talk about McNeil, a peripheral core member, who's another guy that's about 30% worse than, you know, what he is normally, you have to start to say, you know, are these guys done? Are these guys hurt? You know, Pete Alonso, who looked to be evolving into, you know, as good as a, you know, at his best, Paul Goldschmidt after the 2022 season, has regressed to, you know, an okay player, but a player that's not quite the player that he was before that. And you have to start to wonder as you, you know, a week before Memorial Day, is it really worth investing in this core anymore? Because since Cohen came on board, we've all been trying to avoid the inevitable, which is the tear down and rebuild, the complete tear down, something that we've been avoiding with this team since the last time they did it. And even then in 2010, they didn't do it properly. You know, Sandy Alderson talked a little bit about this with John Heyman and Joel Sherman, how he thought it was important for Wright and, you know, to send the message to the fan base that Wright, you know, was the homegrown guy and signing him for long term because they hadn't spent money and the Mets' Q rating was so bad at the time. But I'll be honest with you, you know, the Mets investing and Cohen doing the right thing, investing and bringing guys in to try to win while he was rebuilding a farm system, something very expensive to do, very difficult, really hasn't resonated at the box office. You know, people talked about the playoff, the wild card game, and how there was empty seats at the wild card game in 2022. You know, they did a horrible job of phrasing before Stearns took over the Scherzer-Verlander trades, basically telling everybody in July of last year they were punting and then not explaining what, you know, how being competitive you can still be by not spending, by bringing in component players to build up a roster. Now you're averaging, you know, 18,000 people a game. You know, because nobody really wants to invest, rightfully so, and I think part of that has to do with, and I know the Yankees are having, you know, pretty good year attendance-wise, but not even banner-wise compared to what they used to be back in the day, let's face it. I've said that's partly that could be with the issues you have economically in the country with the disposable income and things like that. And, you know, I'm not ready to wave the white flag here, but I'm pretty confident nothing's going to change as we head towards the end of the getting to know you phase with Memorial Day coming up in a week from tomorrow, that things are going to change exponentially. We know who the 2024 Mets are. The 2024 Mets are a team that has starting pitchers that go 5 to 6 innings, a pretty good bridge to the bullpen that now has been de-emphasized because their elite closer is not even close to being good or average. He's below average. And they're a team that has some good defensive players like Bader, and Beatty's having a breakthrough defensive year. But every one of their core offensive players, with the exception of Nimmo, is significantly below their norms. Even their key peripheral component players like Marte, McNeil are below their norms. Their young players like Beatty and Alvarez haven't really fully come around to developing their skill sets. In the case of Alvarez, he's been hurt. You know, Christian Scott is only 3 starts in. There is some more arms down on the farm. You know, Blade Tidwell getting promoted today. So, you know, he might be closer than everybody thinks to the big leagues, and you'll probably see, I would think at some point, some more young pitchers along the way. But what really makes anybody think, you know, I get it. Last year, they beat the Yankees in July, and, you know, you look at the Diamondbacks and the 84 wins and getting to the World Series and how they got into the tournament, and obviously baseball's a tournament sport. But what makes anybody think, because last year I said, you know, if they had kept those 2 pitchers and maybe not ripped apart the team, I think that veteran team would have had a big August and September. But the the Mets didn't want to, you know, wait and try. They saw an opportunity to restock the farm system because they didn't feel they could go far. They've already made that decision, have already gone down that road. And now, since they made that decision last year and they've gone down that road, I think the half-measure approach, contending while trying to rebuild, albeit it's admirable because Steve Cohen doesn't want to punt on seasons, but the fans are telling you right now they're not interested. The core players, you know, you heard the quotes about Lindor meeting with Marte Nimmo and saying how last year as veteran team they felt they were just, you know, the back of the baseball card was just going to emerge. Well, we've been talking about that for a while. The Mets have had historically bad performances going on here now for a while. Performances that undid them in 2018, 2019, in some cases last year, where just a component of the roster takes this wild 180 turn and just undoes any positives that are happening around it. And I don't see a scenario, and I'll be honest with you, you are now in a position where the next 6 weeks or so, 6 to 8 weeks, is a defining moment for the core players in this town. Now, honestly, a Nimmo and a Lindor are off the table. They're not going to be traded. They can't be. I don't see how anybody would take Lindor. Maybe Nimmo. You might be able to trade Nimmo, but I wouldn't. Not yet. But I'll tell you, as you go up and down the roster, on May 19th, the kind of season he's having, the kind of regression we've seen from Pete Alonso, the fact that Scott Boras is telling him and has already put out his sales pitch. He put it out there. You saw MLB trade rumors. I tweeted it over at X. You know, he talked about how Pete's the only one on the market for the next few years that could produce the kind of power and run production at his position. That's his pitch. He's not telling you that Pete is worth $30 million a year. He's saying, hey, there's a scarcity of options for Pete. And look, the Mets, outside of maybe Vientos sliding over to first, they don't have any offensive options. They are barren on offensive options, as far as I know, right now, today, without diving deep into the farm system, where they have impact the next Pete Alonso type of hitter in their farm system. Now, Pete came out of nowhere. Somebody else could. But, you know, there's no reason to believe that at this point, Pete Alonso and holding on to Pete Alonso makes sense past the deadline. Jeff McNeil, probably not a lot of takers with his salary, but another name. I don't know if there's anything that's going to change. McNeil's done a complete 180. He's become Joey Wendell. Yeah, I know he's got the knobless bat back, but what does that matter? Starling Marte, let's face it, he had a serious injury. The fact that he's slightly above league average, that's what you're going to get the rest of his career. Nice player, but in this lineup, the Mets needed more. The Mets needed more. And then you go into the veteran pitchers. Look, Severino, Quintana, Manaea, really good back end of the rotation starters for a contending team or a reinforcement contending team. You know, the Mets, at least in the pitching department, have some young pitchers that they're going to need to give a shot. The odds that a Quintana and a Severino are going to be back next year, I don't think are very good. I'm sure the Mets would like to bring back some veteran arms, and why not if guys are successful here? But putting starting pitchers on the market in an environment where everybody's struggling to find pitching could probably bring back a prospect haul. And guess what? I'm going to say something really crazy, and he probably right now you'd be trading him at his lowest value. But, you know, he starts having, you know, a nice little run, Edwin Diaz. You got to think about putting him on the market too. At this point, this core of Mets players has not shown that they're up for the yoke. They're not showing you that they're the Knicks that are going to fight through stuff. Yeah, the Knicks lost. The Knicks lost, but they could have had a pity party back in January when Randall went down with that freak injury. Go, up, oh, here we go again. Then Anobi gets hurt. Up, oh, here we go again. And then Brunson gets hurt. Oh, here we go. Like every time something happened, this team punched back. Now they ran out of gas in the end, but they punch back. This group hasn't done that since that end of that 2022 season. Actually, if you want to really be honest, this group actually went out and succumbed to the yoke in September of 2022. They did. You know, I can't believe I'm here saying it. I didn't think we'd be here saying it, but they have. This place ain't for them. Let me be honest. Do you really, you know, you're listening to the opening here and Gelbs. Diaz is at his locker crying now. He is completely messed up. You know how hard it's going to be for him to do this 180 and do the second renaissance in New York, Ed Whitson style? He's at the Ed Whitson level now. He's a mess. Pete has shown no energy this year. The kind of energy that you used to see from Pete, you don't see it anymore from him. Is it because he's a free agent? He's not feeling the love from the front office? Maybe. But guess what? You know, you don't just turn that switch on and off. Lindor, look, I think Lindor, and I've read about it and I wrote about it, I think he's a little underrated in some spots because you don't realize how good he is on both sides of the ball at his position. But the fact that we rushed as an the Mets rushed, and we as a fan base and commentators rushed to sign him because they wanted Cohen to prove that he was rich and that he was the Wilpons. That's how you get into a bad contract. And look, this is going to be I've always said this is going to be a bad contract when it's all said and done. And there's nothing you could do about it. The only guy signed to a long-term deal that really I think will be a good value because the kind of player run creator he is Brandon Nimmo. So, you know, you want to sit back this week and root for the Mets to get back to 500. They had a nice win today in Miami after two horrific losses. That's fine. That's all you have left to do. But I will tell you, if they don't trade anybody and don't acquire anybody, I pretty much know what this team is already. They're a group of core offensive players that are not necessarily going to hit to the back of their baseball cards. Their component players are not good enough to overcome their core offensive players not hitting to the back of the baseball cards. They lost a core offensive player out of the core because he's hit like a backup in Jeff McNeil. The closer, who was all world in 2022, is the exact opposite. And he's lost. And now you got him for another, 4 years at a very hefty price tag. I don't know if I'm the Orioles or any other team that's struggling with a closer. Might be worth, and I don't know if you get a big package, but you'd get rid of some payroll and open things up for maybe moves later on down the road. Maybe there's a team that has a lot of farm system that you might be able to get a gem or two out of. You might have to, at this point in time when you trade these guys, figure out, hey, let's import some offensive players because honestly, all we talk about when it comes to the Mets system is the pitching. And that's a good thing. But all realistically, the biggest thing that you must understand when it comes to this organization going forward is it's going to take a very special group of guys to break this spell, to win a championship. And a couple have come close, like 06 and 15 and 99, 2000. But more times than not, those have ended in failures and what-ifs for a variety of reasons. And what's even worse now is the Mets fan, unlike the Knicks fan, unlike some of the other teams in this town, when they get left at the altar, so to speak, they don't forgive that group. They beat the you-know-what out of them. 06 happened, and they turned on that team, and they manifested, and they helped make 07 and 08 happen. Now, the Mets did some missteps, too, but the fan base was done with that Mets team after 06. They felt cheated, you know, that year. They were surprised by 15, so, you know, the lack of investment in the 15 team and leveraging that didn't piss them off, but things got ugly because of the ownership group later on at that point. And truthfully, like 06, the 2022 team, this fan base is never going to forgive those guys. If I really had my druthers and it was realistic, you'd want to see Lindor go at the deadline. You'd want to see Pico. You know, blow it all out. Start fresh. Because that's how you're going to get the fans back on your side. They're never going to let this be bygones. And to ask a lot of these guys to do what Diaz did, which is win them over with an historic season, is asking a lot of players. And it takes a lot out of them. I mean, is there any better example of how tough this place is to play than Diaz at his locker crying after blowing a save? I mean, he is in his head. You think that that's an accident? You think that that would be happening if he was in Cleveland or Baltimore? Of course not. This team has been through the ringer. The media puts it through a ringer. The fan puts it through a ringer. That's part of the job. That's part of the job description when you put on a blue and orange Mets uniform. Just like industry hate is part of when you put a Knicks uniform on. Those guys embrace it. That organization embraces it. And they block it out and they just focus on themselves. The Mets and the Mets players and the Mets fans and the Mets organization, they do not. They succumb to that. I don't know if it was the deal with the devil after the two outs and nobody on in Game 6 of the 86 World Series, or it was Terry Pendleton's home run or Mike Socha's home run, somewhere along the line, things change. We've talked about this. And if I'm David Stearns, what honestly is going to change over the next 6 to 8 weeks? Yeah, you know, you could say they're not really out of the wild card. It's mediocre. The third wild card spot's going to be like low 80s. We'll see if that continues. And they could sneak into the playoffs. Okay, I understand that. And that would be a great story, and it would mitigate some of the negativity. But is it getting them any closer to solving the problem where they're going to be an upper echelon team for a period of years? That's the question. And I don't know if you could expect this core and these peripheral players that have disappointed now for 18 months going back to the end of 2022 to all of a sudden change on a dime in June of 2024 and be who you want them to be and who they were for the better part of the 2022 season. I just don't see it. And I don't see how Pete getting a big contract from Cohen and coming back next year and, you know, potentially being a similar offensive player, which is a nice player, but not a $30 million a year ball player, will make his life easier. And how that's in the Mets' best interest. Now, does Cohen want to have a bloated payroll and not care about eating money like he's doing with Scherzer and Verlander? McCann, I mean, look, it's his money. He can burn it in the street if he wants, but that's not going to make it easier to play here. That negative conversation and negative energy is going to make it worse. It's best for everybody, for the fans, for the owner, for the president of baseball operations, GM, for the players. It's best for Pete to not be here anymore. It's probably best for Diaz to not be here anymore. And you want to put truth serum out there? It's probably best for Lindor not to be here anymore. And I think the only guy that wants to be here and isn't bothered by all this and could perform because he is who he is and he stays true to himself, whether it's in New York, LA, the moon, in a rainstorm, in the dead of winter, is Brandon Nimmo. That's just the kind of player he is. I think he's, you know, he doesn't let the surroundings get caught up into how he performs. McNeil looks miserable out there. I saw him down in Tampa. I talked about that. And the shame of it is, the component guys, the Tyrone Taylors, the J.D. Davis, J.D. Martinez's, the Manaya's, the Severino's, Quintana, you know, Reed Garrett, Adovino, Diekman, even Harrison Bader. You know, I know he doesn't hit like you like, but he plays good defense. They've done their part. If you were having normal years from McNeil and Alonso and Lindor, it's a total, and Diaz, it's a totally different conversation. The record's probably flipped around. I mean, if Diaz does his job, we're probably having a conversation how the Mets are kind of, even with everything, starting to percolate a little bit, and we're a week away from Memorial Day. But he's not, and this happens too often. And I really think it's almost like a computer that's spinning, and you're like, okay, I can't figure out the problem. Let's start from scratch. Let's shut it down and reboot. The Mets need a shutdown and a reboot. And I hate to tell this to you today, and I'm not frustrated because of the Knicks. I'm upset and frustrated and hurt by the Knicks, but that's not why I'm having this conversation. That probably was just a cherry on top. I just saw two organizations in two different sports in the same town go at their practice totally different. And I said to myself, the Mets can't do what the Knicks are doing with the current, the large current part of what they have on the roster. The supporting cast is going to come and go. But the fact that you have these four or five core players and not only one of them is really at a normal season, and you could say Nimmo is maybe a skush below what you'd expect. I mean, there's something to that. Collectively, the players are not performing, and it may just be something as simple as this place isn't for them. The Pete Alonso-Jeff McNeil tandem that we thought they were going to be, thunder and lightning, that basically carried the Mets offense in 2019. That doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't exist anymore. My guess is Pete's going to get paid and his focus is going to be hitting 500 home runs. I'm not so sure Pete is ever going to be the hitter that he could be. You know, when I used to say, you know, can he go the other way and be a more, you know, morph into a higher average hitter, not like Piazza, like a 330 hitter, but a 280, 290 hitter. You know, the process that I saw him employ in 2022. He's reverted back, in my opinion. You know, McNeil, nowhere near the Pete Rose version that you've seen. You know, we talked about Diaz. It's best for both parties for this to, for everybody to go separate ways. As many of them as you can. I'm serious. And that means, and this could be an epic deadline coming up. You know, you could have Severino go and Minaya go and Quintana go and maybe Ottavino go. And I don't think anybody would take Marte, but who knows? Maybe, you know, Bader, somebody bring him in for defense. I mean, you need to field a team. But honestly, at this point, if you could get something of value, clear out the pipeline. Why go half measures? And look, what I'm proposing is probably shooting down 2025 as well. So you're not just going to all of a sudden become a 100-win team and a contender overnight. But you really need to look at the big picture to stay and try to go through this agony of winning now and half measuring everything. It doesn't make sense anymore. Look, they probably should have traded Wright and Reyes, as painful as that was. I was wrong about that as soon as that Madoff news came down and rebooted at that point. And, you know, 2015 was special, but a couple of years later, as they were heading to big money, they probably should have looked at trading Syndergaard or DeGrom and rebooting the farm system. I was wrong about that. I kept saying, invest in the team. They have this historic pitching staff. Invest in the team. They didn't. Now, part of that is a different situation because they didn't have the money to invest around them. So the reasons for that, you know, missed the reboot or rebuild are different. Here, it's not about the money. The owner has plenty of money. It's just, you know, the feeling about these players, the fans' vibe is all bad. And it's not going to be easy to win them over. And I don't think these guys have it collectively to win it over. And if you're going to keep, look, right now the only two I think, and I think Diaz might fall into that because of the money. Lindor, Nimmo, and Diaz might be untradeable. I would say Nimmo's not untradeable. Lindor's untradeable. And Diaz is semi-untradeable. Diaz has a good hot month. You have to think about that. None of this, by the way, am I blaming Stearns and Cohen for. As a matter of fact, I give Cohen credit for trying to continue to pour bad money on top of bad money and try to keep the fans engaged and hopeful about their big league team when clearly the focus should be on Syracuse and Binghamton and St. Lucie and Brooklyn. Which, look, all of this I'm proposing is bad for my business, the business of Talking Mets. If this team tears it apart, I mean, there's only so much minor league talk we can do. It'll plummet the business model. It'll probably hurt future business for 2025. Well, the only good part about it from a Talking Mets perspective is that all the other, you know, fly-by-night shows that somehow get some play for whatever reason, they'll disappear because they won't sustain interest. And I'll still be here, but it'll just make the job tougher. I don't blame Stearns for this. Stearns just came in and he's trying to say, okay, I need to build an organization that has had reboot after reboot on the front office and ownership side over the last 6 years. You know, eventually this was going to catch up. It was quirky and fun, and we were talking about, hey, you know, this is a different way to try to win. Give Cohen credit trying to win and build an organization and a farm system. It's very hard to do that. And look, I don't, you know, he just lost money. The big opportunity cost here is a lot of money down the drain. For Scherzer and Verlander and Canna and Marte, when you could argue, hey, they could have just blown it up right there as soon as he took over, and you know maybe you'd be in a better spot today. And that might be true, but he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to put the fans through that torture after they had been through the yin and the yang of the Wilpons. You got to give him credit for that. Stearns, you know, we're not going to be able to evaluate him in any true way for a couple of years. Look, his component moves to try to augment the roster around these core Mets players from 2022, they've done well. You're going to blame him for Diaz's historic descent after an historic ascent? You're going to blame him for Pete's decline? You're going to blame him for McNeil turning to Joey Wendell? You're going to blame him for Lindor having the worst season of his career, ironically, as he heads into Cleveland? I can't blame him for that. All I know is it's time, and it's like any relationship that just isn't working. It's time for a breakup. It's time for everybody to go to separate ways and for us to be talking about exciting things like the future of Christian Scott or Blade Tidwell or Dom Hamill or Tyler Stewart. Who is the next, you know, big prospect? that we could get excited about? Are there offensive options down there? You know, look, maybe there are free agents that will come in after they, you know, rip up the pipeline and want to be part of the solution going forward. And that's the other thing. Even if you keep these guys together and they go and they have this, you know, 80-win season or 77-win season, how do you sell anybody to come here? What's the sell story to Soto right now? Tell me. Because I don't have one. Look, with the Knicks, it was always the Garden. But even that, even all the history and the excitement and the big stage, people stayed away because of the chaos around that team. It took someone coming in and quelling the chaos like Leon Rose to really get it moving forward. Because they didn't have a sell story. They didn't have a sell story that was good enough for LeBron and Durant and Kyrie Irving and so on and so forth. And maybe that worked out for them, but the Mets need that for a Juan Soto. They don't have the sell story. If Soto's going to leave, even if the money's more, he's going to leave the Yankees, who seem to be immune to their own missteps and always find a way to step in you-know-what, to come here and take on the burden of this fan base, this team, in this stadium, which, by the way, look at some of the metrics that have been coming out. FYI, Citi Field's not a great place to hit, not just for the Mets, for the opposition. That off the bat is going to give people pause when they come here, because like, hey, I'm not going to perform at the same level. These fans are going to kill me. My career is going to go to you-know-what. I'll get paid somewhere else. And I'm sorry that I'm a Debbie Downer. I'm usually much more balanced, but I'm telling you, I'm at a point, and maybe my breaking point was Diaz yesterday afternoon and then followed up with this Knicks stuff, you know, put me in a bad mood. But I was planning on having this conversation even before the Knicks in Game 7. Because I saw this trending. I saw the way they played against the Braves, even with the dramatics of the Nimmo walk-off. I saw the way they played against the Phillies, a series they should have split that they lost because of, you know, one of their core players performing historically bad. And then to have what Gelb's talked about, that team meeting, and go into Miami, put up a lackluster effort on Friday, and then blow a five-run lead on Saturday. That's a team that's not serious about winning. What has this Mets team shown you since September of 2022? Since the trumpets, you want to put it there. You want to put that as the point that Cohen angered the baseball gods. Okay. They have not shown you a big series win. They failed in Atlanta at the end of the year. They failed against San Diego in the postseason. They came back in 23 with supposedly this veteran roster that if they played to the back of their baseball card would be right back where they with the 2022 team was, and they failed out of the gate and never got going. And now, a new president of baseball operations had a new manager who seems to be energetic and smart and somebody who could maybe be the Mets version of Davey Johnson or Ron Gardenhire, how he was with the Twins, or Kevin Cash with the Braves, and nothing's changing. So now it's time maybe for everybody to break up. Just like a bad relationship, it's time to break up. It's time to go the separate ways. And if they don't want that, I highly recommend, you know, today was nice, 7-3 victory. But I would say from this point going forward, you better, you know, Lindor better show the Lindor of 2022 and 2023. Pete better look more like the Pete Alonso from 2022. Nimmo's got to continue to be the elite run creator. Could McNeil discover his stroke and be somewhere between 2019 and 2022, I don't know. You know, Marte, maybe that's asking a lot for him to be a squish better. Maybe, you know, instead of a 103 OPS plus, you know, maybe a 110, you know, squish better. You know, they could use that extra bat. I mean, DJ Stewart, from an OPS plus standpoint, is their best hitter. You can't win like that. You can't win like that. You know, maybe Mark Vientos will give them a jolt. And look, you could spend the rest of the summer, you know, seeing the development of Alvarez and Beatty and Vientos, seeing maybe what these pitchers have. And look, the component guys, just like they traded a Tommy Pham and they came back and they got a Tyrone Taylor, there'll be other component guys. Right now, the key is who are going to be your core solutions going forward into 2025 and beyond. The Knicks went out and found their core solutions and they built around those guys. The Mets don't, and I know baseball's different, but the Mets don't have those guys. And I don't think the guys that they have are the guys. And the ones that are left are going to need a hell of a lot of help, meaning Lindor and Nimmo. Because I think those are the guys that would be the hardest to trade without absorbing a significant financial pain, which I would not do to trade either one of them. You know, and this is painful. I wanted Pete Alonso to be the Met for life. I wanted McNeil and Alonso to be this thunder and lightning homegrown guys that were a part of the future. And it looked like they were going to be. And it's just not working out. Everybody's getting tired of each other. The fans aren't showing up. The fans are getting angry. And I think it's just time for everybody to go their separate ways. And if things don't change, and like starting now, and I know it's early in a 3-wild card race world, but Stearns is not going to look at this team and give it time to figure itself out. I think, you know, he'll start making plans to rip it apart much sooner than Epler did. Because they've already done it. Once you've made that step like they made last year, you've already gone that road, you're going to do it again. And the fans will, there'll be a portion of the, and they'll get killed by the media, even though it's the right thing to do. And the fans will be angry, even though that they've been asking for it. And Cohen won't be able to do the spin. We'll expect them to be in the playoffs and we'll be fine. And, you know, he's going to learn that the honeymoon's over, Steve. It's gone. It's a shame. You're learning what New York is about. But they'll love you. Just like nobody's talking about Dolan right now at Madison Square Garden because the Knicks and the Rangers. Nobody will talk about Cohen in a negative way if the Mets are winning. Things change quickly around here. But the core crossroads is here. It's a crossroads that I think needs for us to divert the fans and the owner and the court. Everybody needs to go their separate ways right now and start fresh and reboot and give these next generation of Mets, the Alvarez, the Beatties, the young pitchers, a chance to build their own identity and culture without the negativity and the anchor of what these current Mets and what they have added to the yoke. Because they've added negatively to the yoke. They didn't start the yoke. They added negatively to it, and now it's swallowing them up. The yoke is swallowing up Diaz and Pete Alonso. The yoke has swallowed up probably Jeff McNeil. And it might have swallowed up Van Lindor. Maybe that's what is happening to Lindor. But there, you know, that's a marriage that the old ball and chain can be hard for that one to go away. So, hate to come to you and give you a very negative state of the union, a very down state of the union, but it's where I'm at. And I hope I'm wrong. I've been right about a lot of stuff, especially if you're a subscriber to Beyond the Mic. You've seen some very prescient posts, if I don't say so myself. But I think now is the time. And this is where the David Stearns, the guy that you hired, this is why you hired him, a guy that could go out and start from scratch, rebuild the organization. And it's probably going to mean there's going to be some bad baseball the next couple of years. And it might not be till 2026 till we see it percolate into the positive. But sometimes two steps back to go forward is necessary. And I think that's where you're at with the New York Mets right now. And I'd be really surprised if in the next couple of weeks we're going to be talking about anything else. So, anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G. And, of course, I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting the show. And don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.